Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath, Debbie Bruck. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'm taking time out in the day to begin with some inspiration, to talk a little bit about some current events, and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is October 19th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 115. Thank you all for joining me today. And I want to remind everyone, this is a simple study session. If you're new to listening, you'll just have to catch up by going into the archives and downloading some of the old shows. Please do consult your healthcare provider for your personal care. Don't forget to click listen, friend, favorite, and comment when you visit the Blog Talk Radio Who's Reading the Organon website. And I want to remind everyone also that the schedule for our show has changed from 5 days a week to 3 days a week. We're now on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. On Wednesday, there will be a new show, and that is starting tomorrow, Caring and Growing Your Garden Using Homeopathy with co-host Kaviraj. On Thursday, another new show series begins, Vaccinations and Your Rights with co-host Alan Phillips, attorney at law. The inspiration for today comes from Facebook, where Miroslav Plosovec says, I have a theory that being intelligent gets in the way of happiness. I've seen people that live in bliss, completely unaware of problems in the world. They have no need to make things better. They find satisfaction in achieving the mundane. For them, anything is enough. And to that, Miro, I have created a tiny little video of us talking about that exact concept. Actually, happiness is more of your perspective. You can be happy no matter what your station and your situation in life. And we can't run after happiness. We're not going to be able to catch it. It is where we are. And so keep thinking happy thoughts. Be satisfied with what you have. But also know that others are in pain and suffering. So what we try to do to gain this happiness for others or help others is to go out and be compassionate individuals. So there's two ways of looking at that. One is for ourselves to find joy in our own personal lives and to see that other people need our help or our thoughts and prayers. Shilpa Harawani in Facebook says, never expect, never assume, never ask and never demand. Just let it be. Because if it's meant to be, it will happen just the way you want things to be. Good thoughts, Shilpa. I appreciate you sending that our way. Trevor Deshpande says, the heights by great men reach and kept were not attained by sudden flight. But they, while their compassion slept, were toiling upward in the night. I love poetry, and that one is really inspirational. On Twitter, Rotivation retweets affirmation spot. When life gets discouraging, always be the one ready to do the encouraging. And that goes right back to Miro's thought for the day. Encourage others, even when things look down. We can help each other hand in hand. Great Quotes by Katie Heady Design says, all men make mistakes, but only wise men learn from their mistakes. That was quoted from Winston Churchill, a great man. We're going to just have a little bit of fun today and do a puzzler. You know what? A couple of days back, I gave a puzzler out. It was called One Pair Out of Ten. I told you the story. I don't think I ever told you the answer, so I'll just read it out for you. A very mean king went to a nearby village. He wanted some more slaves to serve him at his royal palace. He decided that if any family in the village had more than five children, he would take them. The cobbler and his wife had 10 children. When the king came to take them, the cobbler and his wife begged and begged. Anybody out there who's a homeopath, what remedy do we need for begging? Finally, the king said, I see that you have 10 pairs of shoes in a box. If you can give each of your children a pair and still leave one pair out of the 10, out of 10 in the box, you can keep your children. The cobbler and his wife looked at each other and smiled. Why? What secret did they know? How did they solve this puzzle? I'm going to give you the answer right now. So take a breath. Here it is. The cobbler and his wife gave each of his 9 children a pair of shoes. That left one pair in the box, right? Then they gave this 10th child the box with the shoes in it. That was the answer. So the kids still had the box of shoes, but they weren't on his feet. It was out of the box. Okay. And maybe at the end of the show, I'll give you another puzzler that's kind of funny. We have been talking about epidemic disease in our shows of studying the Organon of Medicine. We have been talking about how to care for yourself, what the traditional means of just lifestyle, getting sunshine, taking vitamin D is now the new way to go about boosting your immune system. But keeping in isolation, because we know contagious diseases spread through these germs that are in the air that go through when we sneeze or cough into the droplets into the air. And once they are a sensitive person is in contact with this, then they will also contract the disease. So there is a huge article called Why Doctors Should Take Sick Days. And it is very, very interesting because we know that MRSA, the staff, is also very much in increasing numbers. These superbugs that survive antibiotics, staph infection kills 18,000 Americans annually. And that's more than die of AIDS. And there's all of this information out there. I'm sure you've heard many people tell you, if you can, stay away from the hospital. Don't go to the hospital because that is the place where these infectious diseases are spread the most. And it's because of our overuse of antibiotic washing gels and not just washing your hands in natural and normal way, but using these antiseptics that increase the resistance of the germs and the microbes that swap their genes and they develop into superbugs. Now, there's a brand new discussion all about why doctors should take sick days. Just like you want to stay away from the hospital as much as possible so you don't get infection, the same thing is there are doctors who are always at their office no matter whether they are well or not well. And there's a figure, 80% of physicians continue to work when they're sick, even though they would have excused a patient in the same condition. They need to write themselves a doctor's note. But unfortunately, the conditions in our medical system don't give them this opportunity to take any time off. There is a huge discussion or area for you to comment on the New York Times. I'll give you that link in the blog. For many doctors and other healthcare professionals, they say that it's a self-sacrifice and a proof of their dedication and professionalism. And I really personally question that, because you know, if you want to send your kid to school, if they have a fever, if they're sneezing, if they're coughing, if they're really ill, and they're going to infect all of their classmates, it's against the rules of the school. You're not supposed to send your kid to school. And in the same way, would you consider it professional if your doctor was sneezing, hacking, coughing, and watery eyes, and was contagious and went into work where he was in close quarters and close contact with people who are already probably not well and who have compromised immune systems and are going in for care? The question is this truly their dedication and professionalism, or is it that they are overstretched in their responsibilities? They don't have enough staff. They don't have enough coverage. They don't have, like, substitute teachers in school. You will be fascinated to read not only the comment section, but the actual article called "The Doctor Is In But Shouldn't Be." And the comments from the peanut gallery, from the public, there's 88 comments there so far, and they're very enlightening about who is having real judgment, who is really being altruistic, what is the situation for the patient who is suffering from a disease and who could possibly take a note, be handled their illness by a phone call and given some good natural remedies and stay home and have some chicken soup if you're not a vegetarian, or some other care treatments that could be handled in another way without having to go in to the office. It's really an excellent discussion, and I recommend reading it today. So we have a number of people who are live on the chat, and that's on the HWC, Homeopathy World Community. If anyone is on there, they are always welcome to comment, and I will read the comments over the air. And some people are sending little chats back and forth, and it's great to know that we have an active live community of professional homeopaths who are out there discussing the contemporary trials and tribulations of a homeopath. They are discussing all sorts of things about how they learn in their medical schools, how they understand disease, how they understand wellness, how they take a case, myths and realities of homeopathy. And yesterday we talked about caring for domestic animals. And after I had read that whole story, one of the doctors in the community had just taken a case of mastitis in a buffalo and saw an incredible result occur overnight using the remedy conium. We're going to go ahead and start reading the Organon today. And we are up to aphorism number 104, but just leading up to that a little bit so that we can get our grounding and our bearings to have it all make a little bit more sense to us. We're going to review the leading aphorisms. So Hahnemann was teaching us in aphorism number 1 about the investigation of epidemic and sporadic cases, that we had to take each case as if it was brand new, as if we were coming to it fresh each time. And the only exception to that rule seems to be regarding contagious diseases, because in contagious diseases, we're seeing the multiplicity of symptoms spread out through a population, and we can get a full picture that way. So on aphorism 101, he's talking about closely observing the first epidemic cases So we would want to nip this epidemic in the bud. And so you've got your experience about the kinds of epidemic diseases that are potentially going to cycle and come into the population, and where the physician can collect a lot of information. So they have their toolbox, they have their basket of symptoms that they know when they are in a symptom picture, they will be able to recognize it. And I'm just a little bit distracted because somebody's trying to chat to me, and I'm going to have to turn that little sound button off so that I can focus on your session today. So we're obviously, it says, we're supposed to closely observe the first epidemic cases, and we're supposed to really be fresh and be new and open eyes to what the patient is walking in with, this kind of symptom picture. And on aphorism number 102, the epidemic disease gets more and more clear as we go through an individual case, as the symptoms start to ameliorate, start to disappear based on the prescription that is given, and as more patients are being cured. And let's say we've got 10 people who come in one day and they all have similar symptoms or symptoms that are in the range of this epidemic contagious disease, and you're ending up giving everyone the same remedy, and they're calling you back and saying, yeah, I am starting to feel better, or they're saying, I as soon as I took my remedy, I went home, I went to sleep, I was just so exhausted. This is your body trying to heal itself. And when they woke up, they realized that many of their symptoms, their irritations, their coughing, their sneezing, their blowing their nose, their discharges were beginning to disappear. And once you see that so many people are coming in at the same time with a similar symptom picture, you know something is spreading, something's going on. And you might ask them, where were you? Were you both in the same classroom in school, in the same school building? Were you in the same shopping center? And you could see where the points of these contacts were in the community. Or it could be within families and neighborhoods. Then aphorism number 103 says that there's a deep investigation for the sura to cure chronic diseases. And he was telling us that we must listen very, very carefully and not just give a superficial remedy to alleviate one of the symptoms, as if you came in with inability to sleep and you would take an allopathic remedy that would just suppress your cough or suppress your itching and sneezing nose or your watery eyes. And that's just a cover-up. It's just suppression. It's not going deep enough into the miasmatic sura that would be longevity over a chronic disease. So we're comparing a little bit something about dealing with only points of the illness and not the totality of the illness, or whether it is an acute situation that just is a one-time thing that flares up and would have gone away by itself, or is this really truly a chronic disease. We are ready to read aphorism number 104, and we'll take this a little bit more slowly. When the totality of the symptoms that specially mark and distinguish the case of disease, or in other words, when the picture of the disease, whatever be its kind, is once accurately sketched, and there is a footnote at that point, the most difficult part of the task is accomplished. Okay, so Hahnemann is telling us taking the case is the most difficult part, that if we take an accurate case and understand what the presentation of the illness is, what the changes are from the normal state to the diseased state, we've done most of the work, the majority of the work. The physician, he says, has then the picture of the disease. especially if it be a chronic one, always before him to guide him in his treatment. He can investigate it in all its parts and can pick out the characteristic symptoms in order to oppose to these, that is to say, to the whole malady itself, a very similar artificial morbific force. So he's reiterating the principles of homeopathy that likes cures likes, that once you get a totality of symptoms, the picture of what this disease looks like, then you're going to be able to select a remedy that is most similar. And when you give a remedy that is, it's not the natural remedy that the person is dealing with and coping with in their life that they got in a natural way through the spread of contagious morbific agents, but instead we're going to be giving a similar, not an isopathic, not an exact same, but a similar artificial morbific force that comes from the energetic characteristics of something in the universe that matches it. Going on with the reading, in the shape of a homeopathically chosen medicinal substance selected from the lists of symptoms of all the medicines whose pure effects have been ascertained. So therefore, the homeopath has got to have an incredible wealth of knowledge. They have to know their medicines. They have to know the symptoms that a medicine could elicit. And when during the treatment he wishes to ascertain what has been the effect of the medicine and what change has taken place in the patient's state, at this fresh examination of the patient, he only needs to strike out of the list of the symptoms noted down at the first visit those that have become ameliorated to mark what still remain and add any new symptoms that may have supervened. So here you can see case-taking, case management. He tells us that in the previous aphorisms, how do we take a case? How do we take notes? How do we list them one by one? How do we fill in the details? And now he's saying, go back to your notes. Look at the list of symptoms. See in this case-taking process which of these symptoms have been ameliorated, which ones have, which can you strike off the list? Okay, so have the red eyes now become white again? Have the stuffed ears, then congestion in the eustachian tubes, is it now open? Has the clogged throat and the hawking of, to clear your throat, has that stopped occurring? Has the direction of the illness where it would normally have dropped down, a cough and upper respiratory illness, dropped down into the chest, has it not gone in that direction? Do you know that you're going in the right direction of cure? So here he's saying, take a look at your list and see what of the symptoms has been ameliorated. And if you are now left with some more symptoms that have still remained, or has the disease changed in any way? Do you need to add a new symptom? Perhaps there's a different type of discharge. Has the discharge gone from clear to thick to colored? You need to take note of all of these details to know where you are in the case and whether you have selected the proper remedy, the most similar of all. And there is the footnote to aphorism number 104. The old school physician gave himself very little trouble in this matter in his mode of treatment. He would not listen to any minute detail of all the circumstances of his case by the patient. Indeed, he frequently cut him short in his relation of his sufferings. And we know through surveys and patient feedback that in today's medical world, at least in the United States, that a patient, I think, gets to talk, is it 3 minutes or less, or in the doctor's office, 10 minutes at the maximum? So how could a physician take in all the minutest details if he has a timeline on his books that he has to get a patient in and out of his office, and he has to be concerned about the next patient instead of focusing purely on this each individual case. So it amazes me that Hahnemann 200 years ago was talking about the same situation. Hahnemann continues, in order that the physician might be delayed in the rapid writing of his prescription, composed of a variety of ingredients. So even back then, they were doing a mixture of ingredients. And he says that the ingredients were unknown to him, unknown to the physician in their true effects. So how many of your doctors know exactly what effects their medications will have on the patient? Do they have to refer to their manual, to their desk reference book about drugs? And what are the composition of those drugs? What are the totality, not just the one effect, not just the one, okay, it's going to shrink your inflammation in your sinus passages and that you're going to be able to breathe better, but what happens when you take Sudafed or uppers or downers or whatever it is that you're taking, that these kinds of drugs that you're being given, what are the mind, emotional, and total effects on your body? He's saying back in his day that the doctor did not know. So not only did he cut him short from speaking fully so he would understand his sufferings, he was very rapid in making a prescription without listening to the totality of the case. He was giving a prescription of ingredients that he didn't know their true effects. And now Hahnemann continues with his footnote, no allopathic physician, as has been said, sought to learn all the minute circumstances of the patient's case. And still less did he make a note in writing of them. So here we are taking a lesson from Hahnemann that we're supposed to be writing down all the details, listing all of the sufferings, all of the symptoms, so that we can do a checklist and know what has been ameliorated, what has been alleviated, what has been added. And on seeing the patient again several days afterwards, Hahnemann says, he recollected nothing concerning the few details he had heard at the first visit, having in the meantime seen so many other patients laboring under different affections. He had allowed everything to go in at one ear and out at the other. Boy, he is so hard on the physicians of his day. Do you think that this is now the case in the medical society, in the medical, in the community of physicians? Are they trying to improve their situation, their case taking, their method of treatments, or are they continuing on the same road? At subsequent visits, he only asked a few general questions and went through the ceremony of feeling the pulse at the wrist, looked at the tongue, and at the same moment wrote another prescription on equally irrational principles, or ordered the first one to be continued. And we will have to continue with our session because our time has ended. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.